Good afternoon, everyone. Meditation, as taught by the Kamala Shila. I chose this because Kamala Shila was the first great scholar and meditator, great teacher, who taught in Tibet and wrote a manual on how to do meditation. So he was the first in Tibet. That's why it has a great influence in Tibetan, the way Tibetan meditate and practice. It was the earliest. Kamala Shila was of 8th century. And Buddhism came to Tibet in the late 7th century, when Padmasambhava, a great tantric teacher, and Shantarakshita, a monk and scholar from North India, both were invited by the king of Tibet, Songtsen Gampo, at the time. And Kamala Shila was direct and main student of Shantarakshita. We will often find in many writings about Tibetan Buddhism, especially early Buddhism, that there was a great debate known as Samye debate. Samye debate. Samye was the first monastery built in Tibet during the time of King Chisung Desen and Padmasambhava and Shantarakshita. So these were the three important figures in Tibet who actually started the Buddhism in Tibet. Most of the Tibetan sources won't say very much, but they often say that there was a debate was between the Indian side, the Kamala Shila, Indian scholar Kamala Shila, and a Chinese monk. They'll just say, in Tibetan, they'll say Hashang Mahayana. Hashang probably is the Tibetan word for Chinese Hesa, which means, it just simply means monk. Okay? So Mahayana monk. It's a debate between the two. The topic of the debate is validity of the instantaneous enlightenment, which means whether an individual, when they practice towards enlightenment, do they have to go gradually, attain the enlightenment instantly. The Chinese side say that it's instantaneous, based on Tibetan sources. And Tibetan, or the Indian side, it's an enlightenment on a gradual way, not instantaneous. So that was what it's all about. And the Tibetan sources say that Kamala Shila won at the end. He was the winner. So since then, Tibetan followed this system, the gradual system of practice. I just recently saw a book written by Kenneth Chan. It's a well-respected book. It's quite academic, also published in Princeton University. The title is Buddhism in China. There I found Chan tradition of Chinese Buddhism had some problems during the time of their sixth patriarch. So that is, when I compare the time, it really fits very well with the Samye debate. The Chan tradition itself, the meditation tradition, comes from Indian Sanskrit word dhyan, which means meditation. Dhyan became Chan, and Chan became Zen in Japanese. during their sixth patriarch, someone criticized the sixth patriarch, Hui Neng. There was a criticism on the two sides. He didn't recognize the sixth patriarch, Shen Xiu, as the sixth patriarch. He said Hui Neng is sixth patriarch, which is, you know, commonly known now as the sixth patriarch. The main point is, again, it's the same thing, whether enlightenment is instantaneous or it's gradual. According to this book, up to the fifth, or even the sixth, depends on which one you recognize, sixth, is a gradual. But starting from this Shen Hui, who criticized that Shen Xiu is not the sixth patriarch, but Hui Neng is sixth patriarch, and his students say that the enlightenment is instantaneous. So I think there is some connection. You know, a group of, maybe the, what Tibetan says, what Tibetan talked about, the Hesham, Hashang Mahayana, may represent only a part of, I would say, part of the Zen tradition, but not the whole Zen tradition. Because Zen tradition itself is now, you can see from there, it's split. To give you a general idea of Buddhism first, Buddha is basically saying that everything, the world is, it exists on a network of multiple conditions. Without these conditions, the world does not exist. So the world exists on a network of conditions. And things do not appear or happen because of one reason. There's always lots of reasons, network of reasons, and these reasons are conditions. Let's say a flower. We have to have an eye to see the flower, otherwise that flower does not exist in my world. We have to have a light. That's another condition. Without light, even we have eye and everything, if it's in a midnight, it's dark, we won't see it. We have to have, obviously have to have the thing there as well. And we should not have an obstruction such as a wall in front of us. Things like that. These are all conditions. When all the conditions are there, then it exists. It exists here because somebody liked it. Somebody wanted to bring it because that person thinks flower is a good. Right? So all these belief, idea, or concept, effort, and all these other conditions I said earlier, when all this comes together, it exists on that kind of conditionality level. That is basically the basis of Buddha's teaching. Now, if you go one step deeper, then you will understand what he said next, the selflessness. Things do not have ultimate, independent essence by itself. Thing exists when lots of things are collected together. Things do not exist by itself. Everything depends on each other. Cause is cause because it has a result, effect. That's why it's called cause. The result, it is result because it has a cause. Right? Otherwise, nobody will call it a result. If you zoom into these conditions, then you will not find a single truly existent essence. So selflessness. So these interdependent arising or things exist, that things exist on a conditioned level, is the other side of the coin of the emptiness. So emptiness does not mean nothingness. Emptiness means things do not exist when you analyze in depth, but yet at the same time it appears in different forms. The nature of every being, every conscious being, is positive, is good. But because of ignorance, okay, ignorance is a particular ignorance. Ignorance means not knowing or believing that there is a I as one single independent I. Because of this ignorance, all the problems come up. So we need to know whether I exists or not. So the nature is good, but we can improve. The world can be better when we improve. This emptiness nature gives us chance to improve. If things are not emptiness, they are static. Whatever it is, it is. So we cannot change. Because things are emptiness, we can change. With the good conditions, remember the conditions. When we have a good conditions, when we put the good conditions together, and good result will appear. And that's how we improve. Yes, everyone wants to be a better person, a good person, have a better life, have less suffering. But the method is often wrong method. Because of the wrong effort, using wrong methods, the bad effects come back again, like a vicious cycle, one after the other. And that bad effect causes this person or sentient being to continue the similar things based on their earlier habits. So our habit causes us to do the similar thing again, and that will bring a bad effect, and bad effect, you know, put us in a situation where we are easier to do the things that will cause the same thing again. And that kind of continuation is called samsara. Doing something similar based on our earlier habit that was based on our ignorance, which means not knowing oneself, nature of oneself. So what kind of action? Okay, not knowing oneself, so what do we do and why we suffer or why we are in this confused world? Basically, Buddha said because of craving and anger or avergence, trying to get something and trying to reject something. When you try to get something or try to reject something, you have the intended action. You want to get it or you want to reject it. Okay, you have intention, and out of intention you will try to do it, try to get it, try to reject it, and that is called karma. When you have intention to do something and put effort, when you have intention, it's already mental karma. And when you do something or say something, then you have verbal karma or physical karma. And that karma will plant a seed as our habit. And when that habit appears, then we get the result of the karma. And those results put us in a condition or in a situation where we are easier to do similar thing again. So the root of all this thing is knowing oneself, the nature of self. How do we know it? Buddha said, we need to in the discriminative awareness or super knowledge. Right now, our mind sees things on this horizon, right? In worldly horizon. We see anything under that, but we don't see beyond that. And now, super knowledge means a knowledge that sees beyond that horizon. And to gain that super knowledge, we have to gain some, we have to make our mind workable. We need to have a workable mind. We have to be able to work with our mind. Right now, mind is on its own, right? You want to concentrate here, but mind goes somewhere else. So we need to tame the mind. We need to train the mind, take care of the mind, and therefore we need the meditation. So that's the whole idea. With the meditation now, with the meditation, we can get certain things. We can get somewhere. Basically, you can see there are four purposes. Okay. To enhance our concentration, so we have better concentration, we can concentrate on one thing at a time. To cultivate a positive emotion, such as compassion, thinking good things for others, for oneself, such as loving kindness through meditation. Third purpose, to let go our attachment so we have more freedom. And finally, to gain the insight, that super knowledge which sees beyond what we usually see now. The final goal or main goal is that insight. And that insight is also called vipassana in Sanskrit. Vipassana. Which means seeing something clear, or seeing something special. Vipassana comes from two words, vishesha, pashana in Sanskrit. Vishesha means special. Pashana means to view. So when you put together, it just means special view. Or in Tibetan, it even says extra view, something extra, something new that you haven't seen before. Seeing something extra than what we usually see. So when one gains the vipassana, then one can see the nature of oneself, nature of the things, the true reality of things. Kamala Shila of the 8th century, his teaching is based on the second turning of the teaching of the Buddha. Buddha, usually we say there are three turnings, three major teachings, three turnings of the Dharma. And now this is based on the second one. During the second turning, he talked about Prajna Paramita. Prajna Paramita is about super knowledge, again, super knowledge, which bring us the other shore, leading us above the horizon level. During the second century, there was a great scholar, philosopher, known as Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna explained Buddha's second wheel of the turning in a very special way. Second wheel of turning has two sides. One is about the Prajaparamita or super knowledge itself that sees the emptiness or true reality. And the other side is the emptiness itself, the true reality itself. Nagarjuna focused on true reality itself rather than focusing on that super knowledge. And he thought it's important because in order to do a good meditation, you have to have a good understanding. You need to have a good view, right view. And if you don't have a right view, meditation would be it will bring some benefits, but it won't bring the benefit that will release us from the ignorance. So Nagarjuna taught the emptiness, and his school is then from there on known as Madhyamaka. Later on, his school was split into two ways. During his students' time, the main difference, why they split, I'll tell you why they split. One student, when they interpret Nagarjuna's teaching, says his name is Buddhapalita, the protector of Buddha. He said, things do not exist. Things means the phenomena, things do not exist because they are emptiness. The other follower of Nagarjuna, much later, known as Bhavya, he said, things do not exist on ultimate level. He added that ultimate level, that's only different. The earlier one would not use ultimate, that word there. The other one says, yes, on ultimate level, things do not exist. So then there's a difference. And then, after Buddhapalita, who says things do not exist, true reality is reality at any time and moment, any place. You don't have to say on ultimate or relative. Okay. Reality is reality on both an ultimate or relative. So things do not exist. If that is reality, it does not exist at any time or any moment. So Chandrakirti, who supported the Buddhapalita, continued, and then there's one school of Madhyamaka, and the other school of Madhyamaka says, you cannot say that. We have karma. We have love and compassion. We have the ethics and morals. These do exist on relative truth. You cannot ignore them. Things do exist on relative truth, but it doesn't help. On the ultimate level, things do not exist. Kamalashila falls under the one who says things do not exist on ultimate level. So Kamalashila's teaching is based on the second turning of Buddha's wheel, which talked about the emptiness and super knowledge, and he falls under this special school, which says things do not exist on ultimate level. And as I said earlier, he is the proponent of the gradual system. So he wrote three books known as Bhavana Krama, stages of meditation. they are similar. All those three books actually focus very much on the compassion. Loving kindness and compassion and is the foundation and is the seed of the Buddhahood, seed of the enlightenment. Meditation is a tool, is a method. Insight or vipassana is the eye, is the one that sees the true reality. So out of compassion, now this is Kamala Shila's writing is completely Mahayana Buddhist way of doing meditation. So the meditation, if you do meditation, just meditation, without he called methods. Method basically means doing, developing, cultivating a good heart, compassion, making wish or committing oneself to do good things for oneself and others, practicing such as generosity or patience. These are very important. Without these, one cannot, even one do meditation for a long time, we cannot get the good result of meditation. So, method, his emphasis are on the compassion. Compassion as a seed or foundation, and then methods or the practice, the worldly practice or, you know, practice of generosity, patience, these are in the same, in this should be in the same package of doing meditation. Of course, you don't practice generosity or patience during the time of meditation. You don't have to. You practice patience when people make you angry. You give things when people beg, when there's a need, you give things. So they divide the meditation into two. The practice is divided into two parts, meditation and post-meditation. So during the post-meditation one, he suggested to practice on these the methods. And during the meditation, of course, you focus on meditation itself. So this tells quite a lot for us, I think, because my understanding is that for many people, you know, you do meditation, and that's meditation is independent thing. It's by itself, not necessarily to do with the practice of patience, but from Mahayana point of view, they should be together. Here, one important thing I would add is that Buddhist ethics, such as generosity, telling truth, patience, okay, these are quite different from the other ethics that, as I understand. Different, Buddhist ethics are different because it has nothing to do with the divine. It is not an order, or is not something to say right or wrong things. You know, it's not a set up things, up to down. It's not something there fixed, and then you are trying to be within that rule. You're not restricting there. Because I think, especially in the West, this idea or sense of guilty is subconsciously there. And it's most likely related with that kind of ethical rules. Then the ethics becomes some kind of binding, some kind of restriction. Restrict you. You cannot do that. It's bad. You're not allowed to do that. So some people maybe rebel against it. On one hand, that kind of sense of guilt is there. But on the other side, people become very sensitive to that issue. And then try to reject. So there is a contradiction there. So Buddha's teaching is most likely an answer to this. Because it's not up to down rules. These are precepts or ethics. Vows, morality things are something you can take. It's on the human level. It's not on the up there divine level. And it's not really good or bad in thing itself, but it's more of something that will bring a good result or bad result. Which means good and bad here means helpful or harmful. Is helpful or harmful, both physically and psychologically. If it is a harmful, maybe you want to try to get away from it. If it is helpful, you want to cultivate it. So, generosity, patience, these are helpful. Helpful for others, helpful for self. Let's think of patience, for example. If you get angry, there's no help, it doesn't help. It may ruin your health. If you keep the hate within yourself, you may not harm the person you don't like, but you harm yourself. So it's harmful. So hatred is harmful, that's why let's not keep hate. So we will take a break here, and then we'll go into the depth of Kamala Shila's teaching in the second part. Mm-hmm.